You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby.
Say that they received very serious death threats after speaking out about the threat to human rights. The defender and others from her community had their homes burned down and were forced from their land on three occasions.
Wait for that. Andrew Johnson is a Canadian photojournalist. A few years ago, he was in the Amazon rainforest in Pará, a state in the north of Brazil. He was at the site of a massive gold mine project. If it goes through, this huge mine in the jungle, well, it will be the biggest gold mine in Brazil, worth an estimated $8 billion. Andrew was there to work on a documentary. He knew that this project was controversial. Locals and activists had been trying to stop it. He wanted to see what everything looked like for himself. That's when he noticed the truck from the security company.
I took photos of them, and they basically pulled up in their truck and came out of his truck and basically didn't say much and kind of just looked at me kind of warily and walked around, and then I was basically just taking photos from the hip. And the guy noticed, and he got all upset. He got really pissed off, and he basically said, "Why are you taking pictures of the truck?" And I'm like, "Is that a problem? I'm a journalist. You know, like it's, you know, I have every right to take a picture on public land." And yeah, he basically, you know, it's like, "No, you can't. You can't take photos of the truck. You can't, blah, 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 blah." Anyway, it was just basically getting kind of irate.
Andrew got out of that situation unharmed. Fact is, he was used to it by then. It was not the first time that he had been followed or questioned by the security company that he and many others assumed was working for the mining company. And the mining company, well, they had every reason to want to protect their reputation. Troubling stories were leaking out of Brazil, and eventually, these stories would reach the United Nations. UN Special Rapporteur Mary Lawler investigated these stories, and what she found out disturbed her. It wasn't just journalists who said that they were being harassed and threatened. Local farmers and protesters and members of indigenous communities, Lawler's investigation found credible claims that they had been threatened, intimidated, legally and physically harassed.
The human rights defenders in the area have been targeted in attacks aimed at forcing them from their homes and land. And it has been happening in the context of increased land prices driven by Belosun.
Belosun. It's a Canadian mining company. You probably haven't heard of them. We had never heard of them. And we did an entire season of our show Commons all about Canadian mining and its problems around the world. The name Belosun never came up. This is not Barrick or Teck. This is not one of these massive global leaders. Belosun's corporate address is a small residential house in Toronto. So who is Belosun? How did they become the driving force behind the biggest proposed gold mine in Brazil? Are they guilty of the things that they're accused of? And if so, how is the Canadian government allowing it all to happen? Cherise Souchirin has this report. Wait for it.
There's a man standing in a wide hole in the middle of the Amazon rainforest. He's wearing casual street clothes, a t-shirt, pants, and a baseball cap. He takes a shovel and loosens some dirt from the side of the hole. Then with his hands, he scoops the dirt into a pan and carries it over to a murky pond at the bottom, where he mixes the dirt and pond water into a sort of brown slurry. But when he pours the water out, a silvery, glittery sand remains in the pan. It's gold. At least it's gold ore before it's refined into the metal we all know. I'm watching footage shot last year by Canadian journalist Andrew Johnson in Brazil. He's showing how indigenous people mine gold by hand. They're known as artisanal miners, also called wildcat miners, subsistence miners, or garimpeiros, depending on who you ask. The practice is controversial, as the mercury used to refine the gold goes back into waterways. But as the man in the footage explains, he can't mine more than a few ounces at a time with his small-scale machinery. However, he doesn't need to dig too deep or too much to get what he's after. In the video, he motions to the land around him. All of this, he says, has gold. And that's exactly why Canadian companies have swooped down into the Brazilian jungle. Buried too deep for artisanal miners to reach are some of the largest deposits of gold in the world. And demand for gold has never been higher.
Gold has jumped about 22% this year to hit record highs.
Gold prices have hit a fresh record high.
Welcome back. Now our top line story. Gold is back in the spotlight. Yesterday, the spot price of gold touched $2,483.73 US per ounce. That's its highest price ever.
With the highest price ever in history, Canadian mining companies stand to make record profits. Canadian companies are global giants when it comes to mining. You've probably heard of Barrick Gold and Goldcorp, which operate dozens of mines worldwide. And it's a Canadian company called Bellow Sun that is currently attempting to build a mine on what they say is a deposit of up to 3.8 million ounces of gold, worth more than $8 billion, and which they say would provide economic benefit to the area. But Bellow Sun isn't a corporate giant. Their Brazilian mining project, called the Volta Grande, is the only project in their portfolio. The problem is, the gold that they're after is located right where our artisan miner and many other indigenous communities live. So once the mining project was proposed, it was met with resistance from local people who argued that it would harm the environment and indigenous land rights. And this fight has drawn international scrutiny. Just a few months ago, the UN Special Rapporteur, who represents human rights defenders, expressed concern about Bellow Sun's actions towards these activists. She said people protesting the Bellow Sun mine report being threatened and harassed, and how the company was using legal means to intimidate the defenders. Bellow Sun denies these allegations. They say they care about human rights, and the government of Brazil itself approves of their activities in the region. They say that they would be able to actually enrich the area by taking advantage of the billions worth of gold under the earth. So, which is it? Are land defenders and local artisanal miners making false claims to drive Canadian competition off their land? Or are Canadian mining executives violating human rights for an $8 billion payout? For the land defenders, the case against megaprojects is simple to understand because mining accidents in Brazil have already caused massive environmental destruction. In 2019, an iron ore tailings dam from a mining company called Vale collapsed, unleashing toxic contaminants which engulfed the town and surrounding area.
On January 25th, sludge flooded out of the bowels of the earth. Nearly a million cubic meters of mine waste spilled over 7 kilometers, destroying everything in its path.
The accident killed at least 270 people. Except that wasn't the only disaster that decade, or the only one involving Vale. The Samarco iron ore mine collapsed in 2015 and killed 19 people. It caused more damage than any previous disaster over hundreds of kilometers of land. But a catastrophic accident doesn't have to happen for a major project to upend the lives of local people. And this is a big part of the resistance to Bellow Sun, because just a few kilometers away from the Bellow Sun mine site is a massive dam project called the Belo Monte. There's no relation to Bellow Sun, the names are a coincidence. But the Belo Monte hydroelectric dam, which opened in 2016, stop the natural flow of the Xingu River, which indigenous people relied on for their way of life. As part of the plan, it flooded hundreds of square kilometers of surrounding land. This is photojournalist Andrew Johnson. He's been to this area of Brazil, known as the Volta Grande do Xingu, many times, and he's seen the changes happening to communities in the shadow of the dam.
It's the third largest hydroelectric dam in the world. What it did was it drastically reduced the water level of the Xingu to the point where travel by river is made a lot more difficult.
There were many indigenous people in the region, people whose livelihoods were impacted by the dam.
So there's the Juruna, or the Yujia, which their name literally means lords of the river. So these are people who their identity and their way of life is intimately tied, connected to the river.
The dam forced the indigenous people to move elsewhere and start new lives.
When the river flooded upriver of the dam, that flooded those islands, they were removed. So they were basically sent to the city to live, and a lot of them live in quite dire situations in the city, in these little kind of makeshift homes that were thrown together to house this basically internally displaced peoples, essentially. So a lot of them are forced to move somewhere else. Some of them went a little further afield to try their hand at farming away from the river. And a lot of them went into the city to try to find work. And some of them live on, you know, social assistance.
So while the dam powers nearby cities, many of the indigenous people in the area say it has only brought them devastation and poverty. And the idea of another mega project in the same area is something many won't stand for. Environmental groups and local farmers and indigenous people have made their objection to the project clear. And in 2022, when a contract between Belo Sun and a governmental agency gave the company access to land that had previously been intended for farmers, approximately 100 farmers and indigenous people set up an encampment on the land. In October 2023, Belo Sun fought back, filing a criminal complaint against 40 people, including 33 of the encampment farmers and three representatives from environmental organizations. The company alleged they had been trespassing on the land. I want to tell you about another man standing in the Amazon rainforest. But this time, the man is surrounded by people. There's music playing, food cooking, people milling around. Because this is a company Christmas party, and the man, not used to the Brazilian heat, is sweating under the sun. So I'm paraphrasing, but that's how Mark Eaton, Belo Sun CEO, was described in a 2014 profile in the Globe and Mail. That was the year Belo Sun Mining Corporation won an environmental license to work in Brazil. The company was only 2 years old at the time. Eaton was an equities broker in the resource industry, and he had little technical background in mining. But in this profile, he was described as having a positive outlook on the Brazil project. He was reported as saying it would bring 2,000 jobs in the first phase, some which could go to the artisanal miners working on the land. That was part of Belo Sun's plans, to bring economic development and responsible, safe mining to the region. And alongside Eaton was Peter Tagliamonte, another executive of Belo Sun. He was a mining engineer, and he came with experience across Central and South America. In a presentation to potential investors in 2016, he spoke of the economic benefits of the mine, arguments that have been supported by government leaders in Brazil.
And whenever you can have a mine operating close by a city where people can work, their kids can get educated, it ultimately translates into a more efficient operation and a more cost-effective operation.
But almost 10 years on, the project has faced significant challenges and opposition. Belo Sun's environmental and construction licenses have been suspended multiple times. There are ongoing accusations that they didn't obtain free, prior, and informed consent from indigenous communities. And environmental groups like Amazon Watch have accused Belo Sun of misleading investors about the project's risks. So why has the UN become involved in this fight, involving a relatively small mining company and a project that hasn't even gotten off the ground? Reports of harassment and threats towards protesters of the Belo Sun mine have ramped up over the years. But what does that mean exactly? Here's Andrew Johnson again. He says that he's heard these accounts of harassment firsthand.
When I first started going there in 2018, people were more vocal. They weren't afraid of voicing their opposition. People were at odds, but they weren't afraid. That all changed basically from 2020, 21 onward. People are a lot more intimidated and afraid. One man told me that his home was broken into and he was basically slapped around and told to keep his opposition to the project to himself. So a threat.
Johnson alleges the intimidation is coming from two fronts. From people working for Invictus, a security firm hired by Bellosun, and from local supporters of the mine.
So yeah, these intimidations happened from within the community, but then there's also the security firm, private security firm that Bellosun hired, a company called Invictus. It's the same company that Belomanch, the dam, Nordenergia, the company that runs the dam, hired. And Invictus basically are armed security that patrol between Bellosun's two properties on either side of Hisaka, this community, this village. So it's who do you run to? And a lot of people don't trust the police.
Johnson also alleges that he has been followed by Invictus himself for taking photos on the land near their mine site.
I'm a pretty white guy, and yeah, it's a pretty obvious. I speak Portuguese, but I speak with an accent, and yeah, I stand out like a sore thumb. There's no mistaking that I'm a foreigner, and I declared myself as a foreign journalist. So,
right. So, how did that altercation go? What happened?
I took photos of them, and they basically pulled up in their truck. And he came out of his truck and basically didn't say much and kind of just looked at me kind of warily and walked around and kind of inspected what these encampment folks were doing, who I was accompanying. And then I was basically just taking photos from the hip, and the guy noticed and he got all upset. He got really pissed off and he basically said, "Why are you taking pictures of the truck?" And I'm like, is that a problem? I'm a journalist. You know, like it's, you know, I have every right to take a picture on public land. And yeah, he basically, you know, it's like, no, you can't. You can't take photos of the truck. You can't, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, it was just basically getting kind of irate. But that wasn't the first time. I think the first time was probably in 2020, one of the earlier trips I did. And they did a similar thing. And they pull up in their truck again. Again, on public property, not on Bellosun property, and get out, and they start asking, you know, why are we filming? And, you know, that's their way of intimidating, I guess, letting us know that they're watching.
It's these types of allegations coming from journalists, activists, land defenders, and more, which alerted the UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights Defenders to Bellosun's project in Brazil. Her name is Mary Lawler. And in March, she traveled to the area to speak to people on the ground. Her report from Brazil detailed concerns about allegations of threats and harassment from supporters of the mine, as well as security firm Invictus, as well as legal intimidation. So I wanted to talk to her directly about what she found out in Brazil and what evidence she'd found to support these allegations. Last week, she got on a call with me from her office in Ireland. So,
yeah,
I was wondering how you first came to hear about these reports of threats.
Well, the way the mandate works is you get complaints into the mandate inbox and they can come from anybody. And then the job of the mandate is to investigate it and to ensure that we are sure about the information. I never take up anything that I am not sure about. I have this motto, when in doubt, leave it out. And if we can't find trusted verification of what is going on, well, we don't take up the case. So so this is what happened in the Bellosun case. But these allegations have been going on since 2017. So it's a long time.
So how have you verified that?
Okay, so I can't make the specific details public because we always have to get consent from the person that we are writing a communication about. And in this case, the person has not consented to their name being put in the public sphere because they're afraid of reprisals. But I can say that they received very serious death threats after speaking out about the threat to human rights from Bellosun's project specifically, and this has happened on multiple occasions. Human rights defenders in the area have been targeted in attacks aimed at forcing them from their homes and land. And it has been happening in the context of increased land prices driven by Bello Sun's project. And I am aware of a specific case, but again, I can't reveal the details as a human rights defender is afraid it might put them at risk. But in this case, the defender and others from her community had their homes burned down and were forced from their land on three occasions. I can say that a lot of the allegations that, you know, when you're asking about evidence, a lot of the facts and issues that I've expressed concern about are in the report are facts.
Waller also talked about the court case Bello Sun has brought against the human rights defenders and how she's heard concerns about Brazil's justice system being used to silence.
The company has brought a criminal case against people engaged in peaceful land occupation, and members of civil society organizations who've been supporting locals in the defense of their rights. And this case was recently sent to court by local prosecutors, which is very worrying, but not surprising. You know, when I was in Brazil, I spoke with countless government officials, as I said, justice workers and human rights defenders, and all of them agreed that the justice system is being misused by powerful actors, including foreign companies, to silence the peaceful defence of human rights. And I also spoke to another woman who was accused by Bello Sun in the same complaint, and she's part of a women's rights movement in the area. And one day they went to the land occupation with food baskets to deliver food. And when they arrived, the security company photographed them, tried to prevent them from delivering the food. And it seems that this is the basis for her ending up in the lawsuit. So you can see that the substance of the complaint seems to suggest that it might represent an attempt to put an end to opposition to the project.
After her investigation, she sent letters to the government of Canada, Bello Sun, and its major investors, RBC and Sun Valley. And Lawler's final report from Brazil detailed allegations that human rights defenders against the mine were being threatened, harassed, and intimidated. She talked about allegations that the company was using what she called spurious legal procedure to intimidate the defenders. And she also mentioned allegations about the security company Invictus intimidating activists off the land, which Andrew Johnson mentioned earlier in this episode. But aside from the UN, journalists in Brazil have also been paying attention to Bello Sun. In 2022, an investigation from Agência Pública reported that a Canadian investment bank called Forbes in Manhattan, which had close ties to the government of Brazil. The following is a translation from the original article in Portuguese.
FNM enjoyed direct access to the country's vice president, Hamilton Mourão, in a series of exclusive meetings in Brasilia. According to a tranche of documents obtained by Agência Pública, the government's official agenda shows he has been present in meetings between Bello Sun and the Bolsonaro government since 2019. In September of that year, acting on behalf of Bello Sun, he met with leading officials from the Department for Geology and Mining from the Ministry of Mines and Energy.
Bello Sun has responded to Lawler in an extensive letter posted on their website. They said they firmly reject the allegations and detailed how the project was in line with Brazilian laws and environmental standards. The letter stated, quote, the company does not engage in, nor will it tolerate, any effort to intimidate or silence opponents of the project, end quote. Bello Sun goes on to say that they are not aware of any criminal lawsuits regarding the security contractor at their Brazil project or any charges with an offense relating to that project. They end with an invitation to Lawler. Quote, the company remains available to discuss all these matters and hopes the special rapporteur will avail themselves of that opportunity after they have reviewed the company's response. End quote. Canadaland has also reached out to Bello Sun for comment. They did not respond by press time. This past summer, Lawler was in Toronto to meet with representatives from the Canadian government to discuss her concerns about Brazil. So I asked her, what did she ask of the Canadian government? What power does the government actually have to hold companies accountable?
When I went to Canada, I met with the Canadian government and I called for three things. The first one was to bring in legislation that would oblige companies to carry out human rights and environmental due diligence in consultation with directly affected communities and human rights defenders, as has been done in other jurisdictions. And then the second thing I asked was that the Corps should be strengthened.
Lawler is referring to the Canadian Ombudsperson for Responsible Enterprise, also called CORE, which is Canada's watchdog on the international mining industry. It's been criticized for not having enough power to properly investigate companies abroad, and is currently under review after the former Ombudsperson's term ended this summer.
And the other thing that needs to be done is Canada has these Voices at Risk guidelines, which are their guidelines for embassies and to help protect human rights defenders and to help support human rights defenders at risk, including where Canadian companies are involved. And I'm calling for the guidelines to be improved by updating the section on business and human rights to defenders to include mandatory language on support for defenders in the situation where Canadian companies are involved.
She also raised the point that European countries have been much stricter and have developed regulations that can put industry in check.
I mean, the EU and the EU's 27 member states, it took them several years, but there is now legislation in place that obliges companies to carry out human rights and environmental due diligence, which is a good thing. So it's not impossible, but, you know, Canadian companies have to embrace that. And we do know that, for example, in Honduras, where there was a woman, indigenous woman killed, it was the pressure of the national and international community that actually, for the first time, brought accountability for the killing of Bertha Cáceres, and eight members of the company were imprisoned. But the two investment banks, they both pulled out as a result. And they cannot use their shareholder price as a, you know, and their profit margins as an excuse for the attacking and killing of human rights defenders. And they really need to start by listening and by consulting and by getting free, prior and informed consent with those they are affecting.
In your communication with both the Government of Canada officials and with Bello Sun, do you feel like they're taking this seriously?
Well, yes. Everyone says they take you seriously. The proof will be at the end of the year, and we in what we see in the revision of the CORE, which is very important, and, you know, what discussions they're having to consider my proposal. So that's really all I can say.
That's your Canada Land. You can email me about it. I'm at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. This episode was brought to you by Minda Fortier, Heather Keane, and Daniel MC. This episode was reported by Charisse Suturin. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio production and editing from Caleb Thompson and Sam Connard. Max Collins is our production manager. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Thank you for supporting Canada Land. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it.
When you die in Canada Land, you die in real life. I'm Justin Ling, and today we're talking about the news. We'll be touching on the largely forgotten Polaris Prize, why Canadian weapons are still making their way to Gaza, but mostly we'll be talking with Paris Marks about